45 metres back. Bernard Foley's
got the legs.
It's got the legs. The distance.
Hi there and welcome to Pick and Drive Rugby. We are the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host Mitch. Joined with me this week is Lockie. Lockie, what a weekend of rugby action to get through. How did you find everything over the weekend?
Hey Mitch, hey everyone. It's been a huge weekend of rugby. Starting off Friday with the women's semi-finals, which were both terrific games, and then despite it being a bye week, I thought we had four pretty entertaining games for a variety of reasons. It's got to be said, there are a few cricket scores in there, but plenty to unpack this week, mate.
Yeah, very, very excited. So what we will do this week, we'll chat through Super W, the semi-finals. I was out there for the Tars and Brumbies game on Friday afternoon, which was awesome to be at. So we'll chat through that. We'll chat through the Western Force and the Fiji Drua. We'll then preview the Super W final that's coming up Sunday next weekend. And then we'll dive into round 9 of Super Rugby Pacific and preview round 10. Before we get into the actual pod, though, we have got our tipping comp and the results there. So well done to Nick Wilson or Wilson's Warriors, who's up the top of the table in first place on 40 points currently. He got 3 points this weekend. In second place, we've got Big Boys or Pearson C on 37 points. And third place, we have Misty 232 or Leanne T in third place, also on 37 points. So 3 points for both first, second, and third this weekend. I'm currently ranked 143, but I have to boast because I did get all games right this week. 4 points from the round.
Clean sweep for you. Well done for backing the Canes over in Fiji. I didn't trust them, but they certainly showed us wrong. And shout out to Wilson's Warriors, by the way. They've been on top for a while, but they're also number two on the entire ladder for Super Rugby tipping. So that is a huge, huge achievement. Well done to you. And at the moment, I'm just clinging on to a slender lead over Mitch, but he's creeping back with a perfect round.
I've gone up 11 places. I was 154th last week. I'm 143rd currently. So, I mean, we've got just over the hump of Super Rugby Pacific. We're in the second half of the competition now. So I've left my run late, but here I come into the finals, take out the top, I don't know, 50 maybe. Hopefully I can finish up in the top 50, but who knows.
Bit of a Bradbury moment.
Yeah, I'll probably start betting with my head again, or my heart, sorry, again next week when the Tars are back in the comp. So that's why I've got the points. But anyway, let's get into the content for this week. So we'll start things off with Super Rugby Women's Semi-Finals. Now, the first final was played on Friday afternoon, 2:35 p.m. kickoff Sydney and Brisbane time. This was hosted in Fiji, HFC Bank Stadium in Suva. Final score for this one was 25-14 to the Drua, which means they do go into their third consecutive final of Super Rugby Women's. Whether they can win that. Was it 3 on the trot if they win this one? So really exciting for them. A packed stadium in this game. The Force were in it right up until the last minutes of this game, which was really exciting to see such a competitive competition. But unfortunately, the Aussies, the girls from the West, not able to get it done against the Indrua.
Yeah, it was a tough one. I thought the Force fought incredibly hard. They were really brave. They took their opportunities from the tee when they arose. And big credit to Sammy Wood, the goal-kicking halfback, who's been one of their standouts this season. She kicked really strongly. I think she ended up banging over 3 penalties as well and was really key to keeping them in this game. But, you know, with them up 14 points to 10, I think, shortly after halftime, you think maybe there's a sniff for the Force, but there's just one player who blew it all apart, Mitch. Adelaide Buna, the Bullet, came out, scored 3 tries in front of a home crowd at Suva, turned the game on its head.
Yeah, just incredible performance from her. And we've seen throughout this season that she's the more the competition's wound on, the more confidence she's get, the more time that she's allowing herself to get and the team's allowing her to get with her hands on the ball. And that last try where she just ran nearly 70 metres to score untouched, straight through the defense. I mean, it was heartbreaking for the Western Force, but you could tell how much it meant to the Fijiana Indrua to score that try, and the crowd just absolutely going nuts off their feet was awesome to see.
probably the best atmosphere we've seen at Super Rugby this year. It did help that it was a double header, but you know, the Fijian Drua media pumping out requests for people to get out of work early to come down and fill the crowd, and they did. The full house sign was officially up at HBC. So, I mean, so much of that comes down to Burna. We've already shouted her out, but quick stats on it. 11 tackle busts. She ran for over 220 metres, 4 line breaks, another 2 offloads, and I think during the game, a turnover to boot as well. She had a brilliant all-round performance, and she is absolutely the danger player for the Tars going into grand final time.
Yeah, that's one area that they're going to have to really focus on is shutting her down quickly, making sure that she doesn't get space to move, and just limiting the amount of time that she has with ball in hand. That was one thing that the Western Force tried to do this week, but as the game wore on and as the fatigue set in, they just weren't able to contain such a fiery player that she was. And so in those last 20 minutes particularly, we saw she made lots of metres with ball in hand.
Yeah, she was undoubtedly the star of that show. I thought captain for Fiji and Drua, Carolina Nasewa, was also massive at number 8. She had 15 carries, made all 10 of her tackles and 3 turnovers as well. So while the Force really tested them in the tight 5, I think just that back row dominance that the Drua were able to exert through Nasewa and then unleash the backs out wide, it was all too difficult. We know that the Force's strength is their tight 5, and they did their absolute best to contain a big Fiji pack. But as soon as the ball got, you know, into those wider channels, I think it was, you know, game, set, match, really. You look at those two teams, especially the outside backs and the Fijians, just had him in spades. But Mitch, give us a quick wrap on the Force season. It's been easily their best to date, and there's real green shoots for 2025 now.
Yeah, it's been really exciting and I guess rewarding from a rugby perspective from the Western Force to see that the amount of resources they've put into this team in the off-season, the signings that they've been able to, the talent they've been able to get into this team, the way that they've been rewarding or reimbursing their players for the past few seasons, we're actually now starting to see that come to fruition. And so this has been, without a doubt, their most competitive season in the competition. They came within 4 minutes maybe of making a Super W final, which was fantastic for them. They'll only get better from this. And what the challenge is for them now is to, and it's a challenge, I guess, across the whole competition now, is that there's so long between the competition kicking off next year. There's only 5 games to be played in such a short competition. Continuity is key. And when you look at a team like the Waratahs, who they've had some turnover, but the majority of their 23 is pretty similar year on year. They get a few players in and out a little bit, but they've got a lot of continuity and they've got young players coming in and getting game time and sort of transitioning through. We haven't quite seen that type of development across the other teams in the competition yet. So if the Western Force can keep this group together, can get a really good off-season, maybe, and we've seen the Western Force are one of the better teams in Australian rugby at the moment of getting games for their teams outside of the competition. You know, they play games against Japanese teams coming and they'll travel over to Europe. The men's team went to South Africa last year. If they can get more game time for their women in this off season, they're going to be a real force coming into 2025. And I mean, we've spoken about it at length in the past that there needs to be some form of crossover for Super Rugby women's to take that next step with Super Rugby Aupiki. And if they can do that next year, I think they're definitely going to be one of the teams that's going to be competitive against the Kiwi sides, particularly the ones maybe in the middle half to lower half of the table. That would be a real interesting watch to see the Western Force go up against that different style of rugby that we're not currently seeing in Super Rugby Women's.
There's absolutely that appetite as well for expansion. We saw the Blues, the successful Blues skipper and Black Ferns co-captain Ruhi Demant, after the Blues beat the Chiefs in the Aupiki final, she called for a crossover and an expansion of this competition to see teams like the Chiefs, the Hurricanes, the Matatu and the Blues play against our Australian Super Rugby teams. And I don't think there's a person in Australia who would disagree that more games is better. We want to see these women performing at the top level. We want to see these incredible athletes in action. And it's only going to make Aussie teams better to test themselves against the Kiwis on a regular basis. So I'm super excited to see where that goes, and hopefully that can develop a bit further. But I guess I can't put it off any longer. We have to talk about the most dominant team in Australian rugby at the moment, and it's your team, Mitch. New South Wales Waratahs 47 defeat the ACT Brumbies 27. The Tars women are into yet another final, and you were there on Friday, mate.
There's one element that I'm slightly disappointed with the Waratahs this week, and on the podcast last week with Emily Chancellor and previewing this, I was pretty confident that the Tars would win, and I came on the podcast and said they were going to win by 50 points. Now, they ended up scoring 47 points, three points shy of that 50, and I was really cheering them on in the last 5 minutes to cross over the line twice to get that over so that I could come on the pod and say that we won with 50 points. But 47 points is close enough, so the fact that they've got themselves into a final again, it's been 2 years since we've been able to feature in a Super Rugby Women's final. So the fact that the team have done what they needed to do, undefeated throughout the season, coming in as red hot favourites into this final, clinical performance as ever. Really, really excited to see how they go next week, and just awesome to be there supporting the girls in person on Friday.
Another grand final coming out for the Tars, and we'll break down their performance in just a tick. But the Brumbies were really in this game. I think it was 28 points to 20. With about 20 minutes remaining, they really ground themselves back into that game. That try from Sally Foisana just after halftime, and a couple of really good kicks from Faitala Maleka, keeping the Brumbies in it. It was almost as if the Pioneers were able to drag the Tars into that scrap. What did you see in the stands?
Yeah, it was the first half particularly, I didn't feel like the Waratahs were getting the pay for the time with ball in hand. And that's just credit to the Brumbies' defense. Like, they kept them out of their 22. They kept them from offloading and scoring tries. And they went into the half relatively close. So it was only in that second half when fatigue set in and players started to tire a little bit, that the back three and the back line particularly really started to click. So just focusing on some of the stats for this Waratahs team in the back line, I don't think there's a team in world rugby at the moment that could stop a combined back line as competitive as the New South Wales Waratahs, just in terms of balls carried, like carries made with the ball across the back line. Arabella McKenzie made 10 runs. Desiree Miller made 9. Georgina Friedrichs made 12. Both Maya Stewart and Caitlin Hulse made 8. So if you've got a back line that's making that many line breaks and that many meters with ball in hand, it's incredibly hard to stop. And inevitably, they're going to score points, particularly late, which is what they did.
Massively. And huge props again to that back three unit. But Desiree Miller was the standout from this one. She finishes up with 8 tackle busts, 4 line breaks, a couple of offloads to boot. And unsurprisingly, she's back in the try scorer circle with a hat trick. I mean, as far as finishes go, she's got to be up there as the best of the Super Rugby women's season.
She's up there with Maya Stewart. Like, both of those players are just absolute weapons with ball in hand and finishing ability. We'll have to see at least one of them starting in a Wallaroos jersey later in the year, if not both of them. I don't think there's another back three player in Australian rugby that has performed as well that deserves that that selection above them. But just not only was, like, as good as Desiree was in the finishing, it wasn't just all down to her. The back line itself needs to get a lot of plaudits for setting her up. Caitlin Hulse put in a really nice chip through in the first half for Desiree to score down the left-hand corner. And throughout the second half, there was line breaks that Desi was just in the right place at the right time to finish off. So as good as they are, and as flashy as it sounds to say that she scored a hat trick, a lot of those points were team or backline moves that she just ended up finishing off. So a lot of plaudits also have to go to the Waratahs backline for setting her up as well as they did.
And the Piggies up front. I mean, we're both forwards. We both love seeing them roll up the sleeves and do the tough stuff. And I've got to take my hat off to Tarsi Lafai. I thought she's been one of the unsung heroes in this pack so far this season. And again, she stood up, was their leading carrier alongside Piper Dark, smashed through. I think she was up there with the top post contact meters as well. And she's so good at getting that arm free. Even if she doesn't get the offload away, she's able to bend the line, make the defenders backtrack and get really quick ball for the Tars. So huge props to her. I love seeing the goggles on. They weren't on this time, but it's always easy to spot her charging around with the Savia kit on. And I'd love to see her back. Her journey back from injury last season was really inspiring. I thought she's had, you know, huge concerns about, you know, whether she would be even able to play again after concerns around her neck and some other injuries. So it's terrific to see her rewarded with some great performances, along with Piper Duck too, who, despite the foot injuries over the past few years, again, puts her hand up and says, I am a quality test back rower and I'm dominant at this level.
Yeah, Piper Duck is just going from strength to strength at the moment. And the fact that it's been two seasons with her, disrupted seasons for her coming off injuries, and that she, when she gets on the field, she is as competitive and dominant as she is just a real credit to the character of the preparation that she puts in off the field, that even though she can have 2 or 3 weeks off with injury, she comes in the semifinals and is just absolutely bossing chicks left, right, and center.
It's huge, and it sets up such a tasty decider, right? Like the Tars v Fiji final 2 years back in Melbourne went completely against script, seeing I think it was Vaito Naikore back in that final who just came out of nowhere to blitz the Tars and hand them their first loss. Was it in years? Would have been in years that happened. So yeah. Incredible to see this rivalry renewed in the grand final cauldron. Break it down for me, Matt. How's this one going to play out?
I'm not really sure, to be completely honest with you. Like, as a Waratahs fan and seeing how well that the New South Wales team has played this season, you'd expect them to come in and play a pretty similar game plan of getting the ball out wide, trucking up in the center when you need to, and then just unleashing those backs when you're in the opposition 22. But the Fijiana and Drua are a team that you need to be on your game all the time. If you go into the 22 and turn over the ball with silly mistakes or just not securing your own pill at the breakdown, they can score points from their own try line. And we saw that against the Western Force this week. So it's almost like you just need to be able to hold onto the ball for the full 80 and just starve them of possession. Whether the Waratahs are able to do that, that's a different question altogether. What will be interesting to see in terms of travel, and we spoke about that last week, that the Drua were coming from who did they play? Was it Camp Brumbies? Anyway, they traveled from Australia up to Fiji for that final semi-final. Now they're back into Queensland for the final. Waratahs don't have as much of a travel element into it, but it didn't seem to impact them as much as we were kind of anticipating. They came out firing on the weekend against the Western Force. So I imagine they'll do that again this game. What has been really interesting from, I guess, a Drua perspective the last few seasons is they start slow throughout the season. The first few rounds, they dropped a game or two and they didn't look as competitive as they did in the finals last year. But they've shown towards the end of this season that they're on a roll. They're coming in red hot into this final and they're going to throw everything at this New South Wales team. I do not expect this to be as one-sided as it was when the Waratahs beat the Drua. Was it round two, I think, earlier this year? It was like 70-something points to the Waratahs. So I'm not expecting a big score like that. I think this one's going to be very tight.
Yeah, that was a massive result back in round two. I think it was at Churchill Park in Latoka. Waratahs 62, defeating the Fijian Drua 21. I'd be very surprised, just like you, if that's the case, because the Tars laid on 10 tries in Fiji. It was a huge statement game. And if there's one thing Fiji are good at, it's getting theirs back and getting their own in a big occasion like this. I'm concerned for the occasion for the Tars. You know, it's been built up to this massive, I guess, climax of rugby and this rivalry that's been dating back, you know, since the Fiji side first came in. They've been the Tars' biggest rival by far. But in the same token, New South Wales look so well-drilled and they've been so clinical. And importantly, Mitch, they're not just scoring tries, they're making their kicks. We saw Fiji's goal-kicking has really struggled with that Luisa De Solo, and that was the case against the Force. They missed 5 of their 6 kicks at goal. I don't think that's going to cut it against the Tars, and I'm really concerned that, sure, Fiji can lay on 3 tries like lightning, but they can't kick it from the sideline like Arabella McKenzie. They don't have these options that can keep the scoreboard ticking over if that's the way that they need to play. So that's why I'm leaning towards the Tars in a fairly tight one at this point. I'm going to go Tars by 5, but it's going to be one hell of a game.
I really wonder if the fact that this is played, and we spoke about this last week, the controversy around the decision to play this at Ballymore, Queensland government putting the money in there to get it in Queensland. I wonder if that actually benefits the Waratahs a little bit instead of playing it in Sydney, just from the mental side of you don't have, I mean, there will be fans there. There will be friends and family who travel to Ballymore for this game, but you don't have the general rugby public kind of there as a final, and it doesn't eat into you of as feeling as much of the pressure of this is the final. We saw when they went down to Super Round a few years ago, as you said before, in Melbourne, they were very competitive. The Drua did end up winning that, but the Waratahs were very competitive in that game. I just wonder if that element of not playing this at home, when they got shocked last year in the semi and got kicked out by the Queensland Reds at Concord, whether just the fact that this is in Queensland might be that element that changes things up a little bit. Not 100% sure. Interesting to see how it goes. But again, I think the Waratahs will win this one. I'm confident that they will win this one. It's going to be tight, though. I'll say 5 to 10 points, I think, in this one. I expect the Drua to show boats. Up. Yeah, similar boats. Oh, and Arabella McKenzie as well, as you said. The kicking element last weekend was very good against the Brumbies, and that's an element. Not only just the kick a goal, but her just kicks throughout the game, kick for touch, making meters, getting the ball out, which is something across Super W that we don't always see. That element of kicking is not as proficient as in the men's game. So having someone like McKenzie who can do that, massive head and shoulders above everyone else. So confident the Waratahs will win this one.
It's a huge game. And almost, it's weird because it feels like a home game for the Drua. You've got such a big Fijian population in Brisbane and they're all going to be out there. It was heaving when the Reds women started their season against Fiji at Ballymore, and the crowd was chockers full of Drua flags and shirts. So I imagine it's going to be even bigger this time. I'm going to be down there. I'm really excited to be on deck for my first Super Rugby Women's Final. And I hope that everyone around Brisbane, if you're a fan of rugby, if you're a fan of the game, get down, enjoy this one on Sunday, April 28th at 2 o'clock. You'll have the Reds playing the night before. Lean it in, keep the fun going, and roll on down to the home of Queensland Rugby for a cracking final. Mitch, any more on Super Rugby Women's before we move on?
No, just very excited to see the Waratahs women hoisting the trophy come Sunday afternoon next week and talking about their massive victory against the Drua next weekend on the pod. Let's move across now to Super Rugby Pacific. So round 9 was played over the weekend. So we started on the Fijiana Drua hosting the Western Force over in Fiji. Following up after that was the Fijian Drua, or the men's team, hosting the Hurricanes at HCF Park. 5:05 kickoff Friday afternoon for us in Australia. Packed house, awesome atmosphere, but not the result that the Drua wanted. 38-15 to the Hurricanes. Again, the Hurricanes roll on and have not picked up a loss this year.
Oh, it was a shutout, wasn't it? It was 28-7 at halftime in favour of the visitors. And that was the last thing I expected last week on the pod, Mitch. I was tipping Fiji. I was quite confident that Fiji would end the Cane streak purely off the basis that Fiji at home are so hard to beat. They've got the 16th player behind them, and it was a full house, as we mentioned earlier. So crowd up and about, super noisy. They took the crowd out of it. The Canes were so good. They scored within the first 10 minutes through Billy Proctor. And even though Izakili Rabitu went over after 10 minutes, it was all one-way traffic for the Canes until halftime. They wrap up their sort of 3-try bonus point lead before the break. And even though they copped 3 yellow cards in the second half, their defense through that second turn steered them all the way home. It was a massive performance. They laid on 259 tackles. That's what it was built on. You know, they made that lead in the first half and were really strong. And then just said, bugger it. We've got to scrap. And they scrapped so well. It's a tough underbelly that we haven't seen from the Hurricanes in previous years.
This Hurricanes team is really forming as the team to beat, definitely, in terms of Super Rugby Pacific 2024, but just the way that they play their rugby, the way that they're just competitive throughout their, not even their 23, but their like 31-man squad. Leading into this game, they made a lot of changes to their starting team. They brought players in. They had some players on debut. They rested a few other players. And as you highlighted, they got three yellow cards throughout the game. Two of those yellow cards were in the space of a minute. Karifi. I'm just going to stuff up the first part of his name. But he gets a yellow card. And then a few minutes later, there's another player gets a yellow card and they're off. Any other team in Super Rugby, I think, with getting two yellow cards at once, going down two players, is going to concede points and is going to allow the opposition back into the game. But this Hurricanes team is something different, and they pushed on and they continued to score points, and they didn't let the Drua get back in close with them. So a really impressive performance from them. Just impressed throughout the way that this Hurricanes team has formed, that they've just got depth and talent across the 31-man squad.
They do. And last shout out for the Canes. I think bringing back Brad Shields from the UK has been so key to their development. Obviously, losing Save last year, everyone's sort of piled on and said, oh, well, the Canes are screwed now. That's their heart and soul. But we forget that Brad Shields was the heart and soul before Save went over. He's captained them before. He's a test caliber player who's got England caps under his belt. And I'm pretty sure he won a title with them back in 2016 as well. So he's a super experienced bloke. And with 13 on the park, he stood up and he delivered a captain's knock, 20 tackles, 3 turnovers, a stack of strong carries. I think he ended up, doing that really tight stuff in close, the dirty dirties that you want from your blind side. And he's key to this. I'm really pleased to see him back in Super Rugby.
Let's keep moving on. We've got more games to chat through. And Lockie, you were at this next game, Friday night, Suncorp Stadium, Queensland Reds 31, Highlanders 0. How great was it for you, first of all, to be at the game, but to see the Queensland Reds get a dominant bonus point win and not concede a single point in 80 minutes?
Oh, shutout. How good to see a shutout. There hasn't been a Queensland shutout of a Kiwi team since 1999. So crazy. Props to Jim Tucker for that stat. Thank you very much, mate. But it was brilliant. So first game I've been able to get to live this year, and I had a blast, mainly because the Reds just rolled them. But I'm more excited by that nil scoreline in defence than the 31. I think probably flatters us a little bit seeing Sully Vunivalu go over with the final play of the game. But it was a really tough and gritty defensive performance from the Red. They ended up landing on touch under 200 tackles as well, so not quite Hurricanes areas against the Drua. But for huge parts of that first half, and particularly early in the second, they were repelling 15-plus phases on their goal line. It was a bit like that round 3 game against the Chiefs, where they kept out the Waikato men late in the piece, and seeing that grit, which is exactly how Les Kiss described the performance afterward. He said it was a tougher and grittier performance than what they've rolled out over the past month. And I think that's what really impressed me about the Reds. There was a bit more starch to it. They looked more physical and they seemed to enjoy that confrontation more. So, mostly tries through the backs, Paisami, Crichton, Vunivalu. But I think that's a Piggies performance that sets up a 31-0 win at Suncorp.
It's an element that's kind of been lacking from Australian rugby for the last few years, is just that clinical element of not only winning a game and winning a game with a bonus point, but your defensive line being so strong that you don't concede a point either. And we were previewing this game last week, or coming off the bye and the loss to Moana Pacifica, and there were questions around, is the Queensland Reds season still on track? Are things going well behind the scenes at Ballymore? To come out and put in a defensive performance and a 31-0 defeat, victory over a Kiwi side, incredible performance. Lockie, does that mean that the season's back on track? Are the Reds still in the title seat to win the competition?
Oh, Reds are always going to win the comp. Never been more certain. But the main thing from this one was, I think it's about, putting your money where your mouth is. We saw over the past few weeks after the Reds, really quick start, they said after these losses that, we know that we're close. It's just about these final little fixes. And it seems to me sometimes like a soft answer to these questions. It's kind of dodging what the issues are, and they say, oh, we're almost there. I didn't say that until last night, but it's clear that the Reds system has improved dramatically, and it wasn't a flash in the pan at the start of the year. We're seeing that the attack systems work. They're more willing to kick and try and pin teams down. They're more willing to roll up their sleeves and work harder in tight to get themselves out of situations rather than trying to throw the ball away and do something silly. I think we just see a more composed Reds team this year, and I think it's testament, you know, to the nil scoreline. That's a composed performance. You've got patience. You've got discipline on your line not to give away a penalty. And that's the key thing. There's not even a three-pointer in there from the Highlanders. At no stage did they decide, oh, you know, we're going to bank the points and go. They always thought they could crack the Reds, and the Reds repelled them time and time again. So really, really impressed with them. Really impressed with Liam Wright. I thought he had a great shift. You know, without Tack McDermott there as co-captain, he, you know, rolls the sleeves up, lays on 20 tackles, a couple of line-out steals. He's been, you know, one of the standouts so far, and great to see him back in action. Maybe a Wallaby bolter, but there's so many back rollers in Australia at the moment, Mitch, and we're going to probably get into it more at the Force game, but, you know, we're spoilt for choice across that part of the field.
So one of the things that we kind of spoke about last week, and we didn't know at the time we were recording what the judiciary decision was going to be. So the Queensland Reds have lost Tate McDermott and, not Liam Wright, Fraser McWright. Fraser's on 2 weeks and McDermott's on three, correct? Was that what the decision was, or was it the other way around? Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Original was 3-3, but that's how it's panned out. Yeah.
Yeah. But this week, coming into that, we were, I mean, there's questions asked across the week in the lead up once a team's named. Can you replace a guy like Fraser McWright and, you know, his substitute come in and slot in as well as he did? John Bryant in the 7 jersey made 19 tackles and only missed one. He was the highest tackle scorer, highest tackle counter in the Reds forward pack. So not only did he get his first start for the Queensland Reds, but he comes in and puts in an absolute shift to kind of emulate what Fraser McWright would be doing there. And that's what you want to see in terms of squad development and squad rotation, that a player is going to come in and have a positive impact when he gets his chance. And Les Kiss must be so impressed with that and happy with that performance, that the team didn't look like they struggled without the likes of both McDermott and Fraser McWright in their 15.
It's a great point too, and it's not just Johnny Bryant, even though he had a great game in his, I think it was his starting Super Rugby debut. Les emptied the bench about halfway through the second half, and everyone got big minutes and everyone contributed. So you saw Lawson Crichton come on in the 12 jersey with Jordy Pataia subbed off for injury, which we'll touch on in just a tick. But Lawson Crichton came in, did a great job at 12, shifted Paisami to 13. When Paisami went off, they shifted Tim Ryan, who's typically a winger, into the 13 role. And then plenty of coverage with Louis Wirtschon getting his debut. Angus Blythe, Seth Fagasi all got big minutes. Penny Rabbi off the bench comes on, forces 4 scrum penalties as well. He had a massive game. So a big props to that development, as you mentioned. It's the whole squad movement, and I think that's what excites me about the Reds this year. You don't look at a starting 15 and get worried about the bench. I almost get excited about the bench now. But before we move on, we do have an update on Jordy Pataia. It looks as though he's going to miss next week's game against the Blues. That's what we're hearing early doors at the moment. He came away from a tackle on Tomosi Tavatavanawai. Worse off, he wouldn't be the first person that's happened to either. Yeah, exactly. And it looked like the right shoulder. So early indications of that he'll miss the Blues game. So plenty of opportunities now are coming up against a Blues side that absolutely flogged the Brumbies, Mitch. I cannot believe this scoreline.
46-7 is the final score to the Blues. Oh. This one was at Eden Park. Now, we know as hard it is to play a Kiwi team in New Zealand, it goes up exponentially and makes the task even harder when you have to travel to Auckland and play at Eden Park. And, I mean, there were questions about this Brumbies team from Brumbies fans leading into this game and from the last few results from the Brumbies. Yes, they were third on the table, but we hadn't seen them put in a solid performance against a Kiwi side, and they hadn't consistently won games against the top end of the table. 46-7, and they were outclassed in nearly every facet of this game. What went wrong?
Before we get into what went wrong, we have a direct quote from co-host Pick and Drive alumni and expert Mark Anderson, who says, "Please remind everyone, the Brumbies still can't beat the top teams and get shown up nearly every time." This case, you are absolutely right, Ando. The Brumbies never looked like they were in it from the get-go. I don't know how much of this game you saw, Mitch, but from running out, it just looked like they had no energy. It looked a bit like the performances of the Reds when they went over to Moana and just didn't switch on. The Brumbies were lackluster. Whether it's the Blues looking good or the Brumbies looking bad, I'm not quite sure, but I think they didn't fire a shot. No. They did not fire a shot.
Say what you will about the need for buys in a 12-team competition, whether the having them in is relevant or not, it has shown over the past 2 weeks that Aussie teams have not come off a bye and performed well. Both the Reds and the Brumbies now have shown that they've not shown up that week after a bye, and the break to the continuity of this of what you're leading and building into in a season is very disruptive, it appears. It'll be interesting to see next week how the Tars bounce back against the Chiefs after they've had their bye this week. But the Brumbies, as you said, they came out, they looked slow, and not only were they conceding points through a really on-fire Blues team, but they didn't help themselves and made really silly penalties, putting themselves under pressure from simple mistakes. Like on halftime, Noel Alessio gets a short arm quick tap, and he just kicks it out on the full, which he can't do. They have a 5-meter scrum and score from it. It's just so simple things like that you just go into halftime 7 points higher than you were seconds before.
And it was that what was that error? It was Ollie Satsford just bottled a kick that went downfield. He let it bounce once and then muffed the regather and gave them prime position, you know, 5 meters out from a scrum. These basics that just did not happen for the Ponies. And they finished up with less than 30% possession. They could not hang on to it. And the Blues, say what you will about them being able to, you know, win the big games. And I gave them a bit of a rinsing last pod and said, you know, the Brumbies will get them because they can't play the big games. They absolutely flogged them. The Flyers outside were unlocked by what I thought was a really good performance from Funaki at 9. I think he was yellow carded quite early in the piece. Tafua Funaki, but he was electric through this game. Finished up with a couple of tries to go for his tally, but he was really willing to run the ball. He sniped effectively. He was a great general around the park. He got himself a line break too. And he's one of those unsung heroes in the Blue side that is able to unlock the players like the Talias, the Rico Ioannis, who we know can rip you apart. At the end of the day, it wasn't those players against the Brumbies. It was the back row, and it was those playmakers that really ran the cutter.
And the Brumbies did everything they possibly could in this game to make Funaki look good. Ryan Lonigan gave him the easiest try I think I have ever seen in Super Rugby history.
Terrible.
From dropping a clearance kick from the base of a ruck, and Funaki just runs through, picks it up, and scores untouched.
Lonigan had a mare, in fairness. Yeah. Like he just did not look anywhere near the pace of the game. And that's your leader. That's your general, regardless of whether you're wearing the captain's armband or not. People are looking to Ryan Lonigan as a future leader. And I thought they should have pulled him. Truly, he never looked like he'd fully clicked. And I would have loved to see Harrison Goddard, who has been starting a few more games for the Brumbies and has been key, I think, to their, 7-1 start to the year or 6-1 start, to see Goddard sit on the bench for 69 minutes while Ryan Lonigan produced his worst game of the season. That was pretty hard to reconcile for me because, you know, Goddard deserves better. I thought Goddard deserved better.
Yeah, it's one area of game management that the Brumbies have actually been fairly decent at in previous years. And you just need to look at the 10 jersey. Last season, with both Noel Alessio and Jack Debrasini sort of battling for minutes, and both were kind of at the start of the season neck and neck in terms of who was going to be better. And it just came down to the day or the opposition or the style of play the Brumbies wanted with which Stephen Larkham went with. And both of them got minutes. And when Debrasini came on, if he did start on the bench, he took over and saw out games, and or vice versa. If Lalesio is coming off the bench, he likewise did the same thing, contributed positively to what the Brumbies were building. This year, we haven't quite seen that as effectively done in the nine jersey. Lonergan, it's a similar problem that the Waratahs have, in that when you name your captain, your team captain, as your scrum half, they need to play, you'd expect, probably 65 minutes of a game, because if you replace them, first of all, you're going to an inexperienced guy that's coming on, and if the game's tight, you don't necessarily have the confidence to see out a win there. But if you don't have a really strong and established leadership group, who are you going to put the leadership band or hand that captaincy band to is the question that comes in. And this week, that's the only thing I could really see as the reason why Larkham wasn't shifting and bringing on what's the scrum half's name again from the Goddard was shifting Goddard in and taking Lonergan off. And I guess in a wider context and a wider point for the Brumbies this season, I think their leadership, their team leadership group has not been effective this season. And whether it's through the likes of losing players like Pete Samu, who is a leader in that forward pack, when you've got young guys who are in there as a replacement, we don't have that leadership capability. James Slipper is having input, but he's not the leader. He's not the team captain. So I just don't see them. They looked lost in this game, and they needed someone to take control and get them back on task, and that's not what they got.
I think it's a bit tough to go straight at the leadership group. I know what you mean in that it looked a bit lackluster, but also we've got to remember that they did, you know, they were 6-1 before this game. So I'm not sure. Maybe it's an outlier, this result. It was emphatic and really hard to find a bright spark. We can look to Charlie Kale making 25 tackles without a miss as, you know, a nice stat, but also all they did was tackle. So he was certainly getting enough practice, and the Brumbies have so much work to do now to shake that off and go for that top two spot. We've seen them finish 3-4 in these past two iterations of Super Rugby Pacific and haven't been able to crack that away win in the semi-final. You need to finish top two, right? If you want to be a legitimate chance at going for the gong, you need to finish top two. And the Brumbies, just like they did last year with the away trips and coughing up points, I think it was the Force who, you know, ruined their chances last year pretty late in the piece. You know, this is a killer blow. And it's really tough now for them to have a path back, because they will have more Kiwi teams lining up. They're going to have repeat games against teams like the Reds and the Rebels who can push them. And it's now dangerous territory for the Brumbies if they're to shake off their semi-final hoodoo. Do we have any more to add about this one? It was pretty lopsided in the end.
Yeah, I think that we've kind of said everything that needs to be said at the moment. Moving forward, the Brumbies need to kind of just regroup and focus on their game. What they didn't do this, they gave too much time to the Blues, and they let the Blues dictate terms too much. They need to come in and start to dictate terms themselves and lead things. And we've seen that against the Australian opposition. Like, they did quite well against the Waratahs earlier this year in terms of dictating the style of play that game was, but they didn't do that this week, and that's what they need to focus on moving forward.
Yeah, chalk and cheese. But game of the round. Surely, Mitch, game of the round is seeing the mighty Western Force, the mighty Sea of Blue, get off the bottom of the table, hand the early wooden spoon to seven-time defending champions Crusaders. It was 37 points to 15 and a massive night for Force fans over in Perth. How much of this did you catch?
I've seen bits and pieces of this one. It was the last game, and we were out for family dinner last night. So I was following the score. I've seen the highlights, just not seen the full 80-minute performance from the Force, but really, really impressed with this team going on and carrying on, like carrying the victory on in such a dominant fashion for the bottom of the table clash. Really impressed with the Western Force. I saw a tweet, and I can't remember now who it was, on Twitter today that said, whatever the Waratahs can do, the Force can do better. And they've definitely shown that this week. They didn't go to Golden Point, and they convincingly smashed the Crusaders.
Yeah, gee, our tips on the pod last week were pretty rogue, weren't they? Golden Point, the Force, you know, seeing the Drua and the Canes, Brumbies winning over at Eden Park. I got a bit excited. But this one, this performance, I didn't see coming from the Force. Not that they, you know, wouldn't win. I think we tipped them to do it. But to win in such dominant fashion and emphatic fashion, it was a brilliant performance from the tight five, I think, that laid this platform. And seeing players like Santi Medrano, Sam Carter, experienced test players come on and steer the ship there was great to see, because we've lacked that from the Force so far. We haven't seen the follow me leader in tight, doing the tough carries, you know, fighting really hard at set piece. And those two, for mine, were outstanding. But the key to this one for me, Mitch, was seeing how well Ben Donaldson managed the scoreboard. You know, we see a lot of criticism sometimes of rugby union, more in this Northern Hemisphere, but around, you know, taking points at goal, you know, oh, just don't take the three, you know, people wanting to see fast-flowing attacking rugby. But the Force won this off the back of Ben Donaldson's ability to strike instantly after the Crusaders scored tries. So each of the three Crusaders tries, Ben Donaldson was able to pop over a three-pointer straight away within 5 minutes after that and keep the scoreboard moving along. So the Crusaders never felt like they were in a position to really push ahead and surge ahead. And it's an underrated aspect, I think, of the Force's game now. We've seen them be a gritty, grumbly side that can frustrate you, but throw in Ben Donaldson kicking, you know, all of his penalties, that's 15 points out of nowhere that really skewered the Crusaders at the end of the day.
Oh, 100%. And another player that I was really impressed with was Kirtley Beall. We've spoken about what impact he would have on this team, whether he comes straight into that 15 jersey. We weren't sure when we recorded last week, but he did. He started at fullback. And from what has been, like, his impact in the game was really positive. But what's also players are saying in post-match interviews and after the game is just that he's brought energy, he's brought direction, and he's brought composure that they don't haven't necessarily had. So just looking at some of the stats for this game, what I think having Kirtley Beall at fullback has allowed the playmakers, almost, if you want to call them that, in this backline to stand up and to actually have impact on the game. So Ben Donaldson made 7 carries, Hamish Stewart made 9, and Kirtley Beall himself made 6. So outside of that, we've had Sam Spink, Bailey Kunzel, they only had 3 each. But it meant that the ball carriers and the ball attacking players in the back line had confidence to get their hands on the ball and to run the ball. And I just, from watching how Ben Donaldson played and how he managed this game, I almost have to think that having a player like Kirtley Beall at fullback, just having him in the back line, allowed Donaldson to calm down just that little bit, focus on the game. Maybe it even takes a little bit of pressure in terms of leadership off his shoulders, and he can just focus on his ball playing and his kicks at goal and kicks at posts that he didn't have when he didn't have a player like Beall there. He had a more less experienced fullback in that 15 jersey. I just think that with Kirtley Beall there, both Ben Donaldson and Hamish Stewart had really positive involvements in the game.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the 10-15 combo with Dono and Kirtley worked well in of itself. You saw them link up a couple of times with Donaldson stretching defenders wide on an overs line and then popping back in. And that yielded 2 line breaks. And every time they went to it outside of that, Kirtley would bend the line as well or be able to attract defenders for another runner coming under the pill. So we're seeing, I guess, a bit more creativity with Kirtley at the back. You know, it's not a knock on back three players like a Max Bury, a Harry Potter, some of the outside backs, but none of them are as established as a creative playmaking option as Kirtley is. You know, he's been, you know, pulling something out of nothing ever since he burst onto the scene, what, you know, Robbie Dean's era. So this is a vastly experienced test player, and he was able to, you know, be that, you know, the fire to Dono's ice, for lack of a better term. I think they worked really well together. So that's something I'd love to see moving forward. But we got to talk about the Crusaders now. You know, we're an Aussie rugby podcast. We love seeing these teams and we're always happy to bag the Kiwis. But this is a fall from grace that no one could have predicted. There's no Razor and Shaw. Maybe they don't win a title, but to be bottom of the ladder halfway through. Like, Rob Penny's job must be under scrutiny.
I saw another tweet this week around from one of the Kiwi journalists that was talking about how both Penny and I think Dermody, the Highlanders coach, their seasons are tanking at the moment. But what this journalist was saying is that in New Zealand, we won't sack a coach mid-season because it goes to it basically admits that you made the wrong decision to appoint them in the first place. And that's something apparently that the New Zealand Rugby Union doesn't want to just admit fault there. So they'd rather see it out a season and then maybe do a review and get rid of them post-season. I thought that was interesting because in Australia, we're very much the opposite. And if we've had three bad games, we'll get rid of the coach straight away. Get him out of there.
Love a chop. Love a chop.
Love a chop. But the Crusaders are a really interesting kind of it'd be really, really interesting to see almost like a documentary of what happened between 2023 and 2024 and how you've got a shift of players leaving, you've got a fairly inexperienced roster, a new coach coming in, and a heap of injuries at the start of the season that sees a lot of your best All Blacks players not getting many minutes throughout the season. And this is the way that the season has gone for them. And they're currently last, they're 12th overall on the table. They've got one win to their name against the Chiefs, but they still don't have a roster that screams to me as Super Rugby failures. They still should be performing.
They've got a great roster.
They've got a good roster. I wouldn't say they've got a great roster. They're not Queensland Reds, right?
Oh, don't lean into my bias here. They're stacked with All Blacks. Like, look at who's on the field for them in this game. You know, Sevu Reece breaks the try scoring record. You know, I don't think anyone's saying that Sevu Reece has been a reason why the Crusaders have been playing poorly, because he's been phenomenal so far. But already, when you look at that lineup, you've got, I think that's an all Black front row when you include George Bell on the bench. Joe Moody and Owen Franks are hugely experienced. Ethan Blackadder, coming back from injury, is still touted as one of the best six options in the country. Tom Christie's been around forever. Dallas McLeod, Levi Omua, Sevu Reece. These are all really good players. And then George Bauer and Fletcher Newell on the bench are also All Blacks. They're stacked. They're stacked in something has gone deeply, deeply wrong. Even though they're without Will Jordan, even though they're without Sam Whitelock and without Richie Monga, who are generational players, we can agree on that. There is enough talent in there that they should be at least sort of 4-4 at this point in the season. Yep. I'm really worried about what's going on there. Not from a sense of I actually care and, you know, I want the Crusaders to desperately start succeeding again, but it's fascinating to see a team with such an incredible winning culture against all odds throughout their history, especially since Super Rugby went to Super 12, just to tank, to implode so dramatically. I want to see this doco.
Yeah.
Give me the doco.
Get New Zealand Rugby in there. Let's find out what's going wrong, because from the outside, it doesn't look, there's no easy fix here. It doesn't look like there's one or two areas that they can just fix up a little bit. Like, it's not like their scrum or line out is just not quite working. Fix that up and that'd be better. Like, their backline players, Levi Amua, Sevu Reece, these guys make meters on contact every single time, yet they're just not getting the ball in hand enough. They're not using their backline players as well. And whether it comes down to the fact that they've got a young, inexperienced fly half in, is it Hohipa? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah, you got Riley Hohipa, you've got Rives Reihana. There's a few options. I'm pretty sure Taha Kemera was the under-20s All Black fly half as well, and he partners Noah Hotham a lot. So they've got stacks of talent there.
They're talented, but they're not experienced. And that's
you've got
these talented players in key pivotal positions, like your fly half, fullback, that are not at the moment experienced enough to know what to do when the game starts to get away from them. And that's what we're seeing. And I think there are questions, I think, that will need to be asked in a review around Rob Penny and his style of coaching. Because when you look at the Waratahs in 2020, very similar things happened in terms of he came in, he had a young squad. There were other things going on behind the scenes in his Waratahs tenure around the board not giving him full access to the the budget they needed to sign good talent and that type of thing. But he went with young players in key pivotal positions that saw them not be competitive in the Super Rugby season. Now he's come back into Super Rugby with the Crusaders and he's done the same thing. So whether you, if anyone is capable of taking it, if there's one coach at World Rugby at the moment that seems capable of taking a world-beating team and taking them to the bottom of the table, unfortunately, it seems to be Rob Penny.
Oh, it's not a great rap for him. Honest.
It's not.
I don't want to harp on too much about it, but the Crusaders, they just didn't look disciplined. I'm used to seeing the Crusaders be ruthlessly efficient, even if they're not the most star-studded team. Their defense will be solid. They won't give away stupid penalties, especially when they've got the ball. That was a hallmark under Scott Robertson, I thought, was their discipline and their patience. But they gave away so many attacking penalties that I could see. When I was covering this one, they were going off their feet at ruck time all the time, pre-latching and then sealing straight over the ball. You know, these aren't things that are accidents. These are intentional decisions to slow down the ball, and they're getting pulled up. So maybe it's also a case of them just not adapting to rule changes as quickly as other teams. But you're seeing them give away 5 offside penalties for no reason, and give away all these penalties for sealing, for going off your feet, for incorrect entry. It's really uncharacteristic. And it points to, it, for me, it points to coaching rather than playing aptitude. Yep. But yeah. I'm going to stop myself there because I'll get too excited.
But as good as it is to see a poor Crusaders team, no discredit to the Western Force. They did well to run away with this game. Fantastic to see the likes of Isaac Rodder. Jeez, I'm bad with names today. Isaac Rodder coming back from injury, getting big minutes for them off the bench. 59 minutes, I think he ended up playing, which was awesome to see back for the Western Force. I mean, he's only played a handful of games for them in the time that he's been back from Europe. So if they can get him on the park consistently moving forward, having the likes of Curly Bill back in the back line, Hamish Stewart, they've got the potential now to really push on in this second half of the competition. And with the signings, there's been some other signings this week. Curly Bill's one of them. You teased a signing last week, Lockie. Do you want to let the fans in on who that was?
Oh, yeah, that went public a couple of days ago. Nick Dolly, a former Australian age grade representative. He's got a cap for England. I think he was capped under Edward Jones when he was the coach of the England men's rugby union team. Mm-hmm. But Nick Dolly's a quality player. He's been playing his trade for Leicester Tigers over there for a little while, to my understanding. And another great pickup because we're seeing hookers drop like flies over at the Force. So it's great to see a homegrown talent get a shot there. But you're right. The performance of the Crusaders shouldn't detract from how ruthless and physical the Force were. We spoke about him before we went on air, Mitch, but Carlo Tozzano laid on 26 tackles and a turnover. I thought Reid Princep at number 8 was really effective as well. I saw the Force gave him their Best on Ground award on socials, and he had a huge tackle right on his goal line to dislodge the ball, which ultimately led to, I think, Sam Carter's try. They spin it wide, Ben Donaldson boots it upfield. They chase, regather, and score from the mall. So that all comes down to Princep's physicality. He's been a great pickup for the Westerners as well. So I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled for the Force. They haven't beaten the Crusaders since 2013. I don't know if you saw on socials or the stand coverage for those listening, but Nick White has never beaten the Crusaders.
Oh, really? And
ever in his career. And he was over the moon to do it. You saw it on his socials, posting a photo with his kids saying, first time ever. And that's just it's a great storyline. So we just got to enjoy seeing teams beat the Crusaders. Yeah, it's a big deal, not just for fans, but for these teams who have been, rolled by them so many times, especially for someone like the Force who needed this to get their season on track. I mean, what a treat for a Force fan to go out there against all odds on a Saturday night and see your team knock over the reigning premiers. It's so good for the competition.
And that one try that the Crusaders scored that probably shouldn't have been a try as well. In the replay, it looks like he got knocked out as he grounds it.
Oh, yeah.
Could have been even Could have been even better, but it is what it is. And I am conscious of time, so we will keep moving on because we've got a preview round 10 of Super Rugby Pacific. So let's get into that. Just focusing quickly on the table and what that looks like after nine rounds of the competition. We've got in first place the Hurricanes on 37 points, followed closely by the Blues on 32 points. The Brumbies are still in third place on 27 points. Rebels, with the bye, they've still been able to take fourth place, so they're on 24 points. Chiefs in fifth on 23 points. Queensland Reds on sixth, 22 points. Fiji Drua on seventh, 13 points there. Moana Pacifica in eighth, 13 points as well. New South Wales Waratahs making a claim for, or making a run for that final eight, in ninth place on 12 points. So they're 1 point behind both seventh and eighth place. So they're coming hard for the second half of this competition. Highlanders in 10th on 11 points. Western Force now on in 11th on 9 points. And the Crusaders in 12th on 7 points. So let's move into round 10 and what that looks like. Now there's a big game coming up on Friday night for the Melbourne Rebels. So Melbourne Rebels versus the Crusaders. This is being played in... Actually, I'm not sure where that is. It's Apollo Project Stadium. Is that the new name for...
That's Christchurch.
That's Christchurch. Okay. So the Crusaders are back in Christchurch, hosting the Melbourne Rebels. Lockie, can the Rebels beat the Crusaders in Christchurch?
I never would have said yes before this season and what we've seen from the Crusaders. I still think that they deserve to go in as favourites. I feel like a bit like what we saw after... the bye, I think the Crusaders came back and ended up beating the Chiefs.
Yep.
So the Crusaders can clearly play, and at home they've shown that. So I'm still going to tip the Crusaders purely because the lashback or the expected lashback will be massive. But yeah, if the Rebels can get up for this one, it's going to prove that they're not just a flat track bully. You know, we've seen the Rebels, you know, bank a couple of wins at home now. They're up the top of the ladder in fourth, but they haven't produced, for me, a statement win abroad yet. They got dusted by the Hurricanes earlier in the season, which is, you know, clearly everyone's been dusted by them, but they need to show that they can win over the ditch and win well. So massive game for both teams. I'm still tipping Crusaders, though. How about you?
I think that the Rebels have the ability to win this one. And if they're... there's a team that's beatable this year at home or away, it's the Crusaders, as we've spoken about earlier, ad nauseum. So I'm going to tip the Rebels this one. I mean, that element of coming off a bye, we haven't seen an Aussie team do it well yet. And that'll be a talking point in the next game as well. But if the Rebels can come off this bye well and put a lot of pressure on the Crusaders at home, I think they could do it. So I'll say the Rebels by 2 or 3 points.
Ooh, massive, massive call. Next one's in your patch, Mitch. Talk to me about the Tars.
Yeah, Waratahs hosting the Chiefs on Friday evening, 7:35 at Allianz Stadium. Again, as we said in the last game, the Waratahs off a bye. The Chiefs also off a bye, so two teams coming off the bye. We're recording this on Sunday afternoon, so we don't have the team sheets yet. It's kind of hard at the moment to know. Look, there's varying scenarios in this game that could see either team get ahead. For mine, if the Waratahs start... Will Harrison over Tane Edmund? I think that gives them more of a chance, personally, against the Chiefs. Likewise, if the Chiefs rest, not that they probably would, but if the Chiefs rest Damian McKenzie, I think that also leans things towards the Waratahs. So we're not quite sure yet which way both coaches are going in terms of their team sheets, but expecting that a similar team that played against the last round before the bye for both teams, I think the Chiefs edge this one. I hope the Waratahs show up and put in a good performance, but I think the Chiefs still have enough to win this by at least 10 points.
I'm feeling a little differently at this point. I think that the Tars, after that win against the Crusaders, after having a bit of a break, should be refreshed at home. It's the kind of turning point for a season that can make or break you, right? And I'm inclined to go with the heart and think that the Tars can do it against the Chiefs. I have no stats to back that up. It's purely gut feel and gut feel alone. So I'm going to say it's going to be Tars in quite a tough one. I'm going to say Tars by 3.
Golden Point again or?
Oh, no, I'm not tipping Golden Point anymore.
All right, moving on. We've got the Fiji and Drua hosting Moana Pacifica, the Battle of the Pacific. This is being played at Churchill Park in Lautoka, I believe that one is, in Fiji. Is this the first time Moana and Fiji have played in Fiji? I think they have played in Super Round before. They've played in Apia, I think. Good question.
It might be, regardless what the crowd that's going to be.
It's going to be an absolutely incredible clash. The Battle of the Pacific, which way do you see it going?
Tough to call. I feel as though Fiji should still go in as favourites at home, despite the Hurricanes. And I think it's more because of the Hurricanes being so good this year. It's not as much of a knock on the draw. Moana have been impressive. Obviously, they got them the first time in Super Round, the first time they'd ever beaten the Drua. I can't see it happening twice in a year, though. Fiji have a point to prove after the Canes touched them up. So I'm going to say Fiji by at least 10.
Yeah, Fiji by, I'll say 5 in this one. I think Moana Pacific have shown through this season that they're better than they have been in the past. The fact, though, that the Fiji can stay at home in Fiji and prepare for this one, back-to-back home games is a massive element as well. So Fiji draw for that one for mine. We've got the next game is the ACT Brumbies hosting the Hurricanes. Yes, they are back in Canberra, but the punches keep coming for the boys from Canberra. Hurricanes undefeated, moving into the nation's capital. Do you think the Brumbies can bounce back from their performance this week against the Blues and pose a threat to this unstoppable Hurricanes force at the moment?
I would tip the Brumbies if they'd put up more of a fight.
Mm.
The problem wasn't so much the scoreline, even though it was terrible against the Blues. It was the fact they didn't fire any shots at all. They didn't show me that they can break this circuit of the Hurricanes. And, you know, teams are bound to drop at least one game through their season. But I can't tip against the Canes at the moment. They're so strong and their pack is just so big and nasty. It's a proper Kiwi nasty pack. So I'm going to say Canes probably tighter than we expect. I'll call it single digits, but yeah, Brums, well, won't tip them for this one.
Yeah, I think the Hurricanes have got this one in the bag. I don't think this is going to be a tight one. I think the Hurricanes could do this by 30 or more, particularly if it's the same Brumbies team that shows up as we saw on Saturday night against the Blues. So big win for the Hurricanes coming this week. Next game is the Western Force in their first, first game over in New Zealand this year. So they're off to Forsyth Barr Stadium against the Highlanders. Can they keep this success from the Crusaders game moving into their next away game, and can they take down the Highlanders?
I think on paper they can. On paper they've probably got as good, if not a better team now with the additions of the Sam Carters, the Isaac Rodders, the Kirtley Beals. But it's such a big trip. At least three flights to get from Perth across all the way to Dunedin. And I think that travel, even though it's on the Saturday, makes it hard to tip the Force. So I'm going to say the Highlanders are in a bit of a loosey-goosey game. I can see a lot of long-range tries, a lot of errors, a bit going on there. So I'm going to say Highlanders by 10.
I'm going with Western Force in this one. I think they played really well on the weekend and the Highlanders were trash against the Reds. So the Highlanders is going to continue falling out of lower and lower on the table, finish bottom of the table with the Western with the Crusaders this season. Western Force to win there.
How good would that be?
That would be awesome. Now, the game of the round, I'm calling it the two colours up against each other. Yes. Almost the state of origin in terms of naming conventions. Queensland Reds hosting the Auckland Blues on Saturday evening, 7:35 in Suncorp Stadium. Can the Reds take down the Blues?
They can. Will they?
Without McDermott and McWright.
Yeah, well, that's the trick, isn't it? Funaki's been so good for the Blues at 9 over the past little while. And credit to Kalani Thomas, though. He played a really good game, I thought, for the Reds. And he has a bit of an inside scoop after playing NPC for Auckland as well. So maybe there's a few tricks of the trade that he can lay over. But without McDermott, without Pataia, we've lost a few real attacking weapons out wide. I'm worried that we are going to lose out in firepower out wide. So in the likely circumstance that Paisami ends up shifting to 13, I think you've got too many big ball runners that can go up the middle through a Lawson Crichton, through a Harry McLaughlin Phillips if he ends up at 12. So my brain's telling me Blues, but Anzac weekend, I'm going with the gut. I'm going to say Reds by two, but I don't really believe it. Mitch, help me out here.
My heart says Reds. My head also says Reds, but my game line analytics theory or the cohesion element leads into the Blues getting up in this one, purely from the fact that the Queensland Reds are wearing a predominantly green jersey this week for Anzac Day. And when teams change their strip, it's this data to proves it that they don't win. And so I think the Queensland Reds have the team and the talent to challenge the Blues, but playing in a strip that is completely different to anything else that you've trained or played in all year, I think is going to be the element that might shift things in the Blues' favor. So I'll say the Blues, but I think the Reds will be in this one very tight at the end. One thing I want to say before we finish the podcast, though, this round of rugby is a true litmus test of Australian rugby. This is going to be the real challenge to see whether that gap has closed. We have absolutely massive fixtures across the weekend. Every Australian team is up against a New Zealand team, and every game is a hard one for that Aussie side. So if we can come out of this with two wins, that'd be incredible. We could very well come out of this round with no wins across the board.
Or five. We just don't know. At the moment, we are the Kiwis that have 8 wins and we have 7. That's where we're standing at the moment. Oh, no, maybe it's... Yeah, it's 8-7. 8-7 at the moment. So thanks to the Force, we love you. So an opportunity for us for the first time in God knows how many years, Mitch, for the Australians to have more wins than the Kiwis at any point of a Super Rugby season. That would send them into a spiral. It'd be wonderful.
That would be awesome. Let's hope that it happens. Our rugby brains are praying to the rugby gods that is the case. But regardless, make sure you tune in. And make sure you tune in as well to the Super W final that is being played on Sunday afternoon. If you're in Queensland, get down to it. It is at Ballymore. So get down, support the girls. Support the Waratahs, support the Drua, whichever way you go. It's going to be a cracking game of rugby either way. And that's kind of it for Super Rugby Pacific Round 10. Anything else, Lockie, before we sign off?
No, support the rugby that's going on. If you've got a game in your patch, make sure you go down, show people that you care by getting your tickets, vote with your feet. And if you're around Ballymore, flick us a message to either Pick and Drive or Scrum Bags, and I'll come down and say good day, because anyone who sports runs rugby is a big fan, a big friend of mine. So looking forward to seeing you all there.
Up the Tars. See you all next week. Bye.